Gentlemen, good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. And we have with us tonight a wonderful paradigm shifter, a woman who we've been privileged enough to talk to before, Linda Sherman, who's an astrologer. And she writes a newsletter called Soothsayer, and she's on www.soothsayer.com. And in her newsletter, it's been pretty kind of it could be feeling a little bit scary, but she challenges us to stay awake and pay attention to the way the fields of the astrological designations are actually affecting and reflecting back on our planet. And she deals with economic things and political things. And what's up? What's next on planet Earth? Linda, welcome to the show.
Well, it's very nice to be on your show, Veronica. I'm very happy to be here with your listeners.
Me too, and I know there are a lot of people really glad you're here. And I'm just, the thing that's bothered a lot of us is that we're trying to be conscious, like we were talking, you and I, today about waking up. We're trying to be awake and conscious and not stop listening to the news, but actually tune in to what's going on. Why don't you give us some of the things that are coming up, like the 26th of June, where there's going to be an eclipse, what happened with the Gulf oil spill, what happened in the planets that really gave you the idea that that was up and coming, because you sure mentioned that in January, and it happened in May, right? What's happening?
Yes, in my newsletter, my January Soothsayer, online newsletter, it was one of the predictions I made for the year. Specifically, I quote, some kind of nuclear crisis and or chemical or oil spill with significant environmental consequences. This is related to the upcoming June 26th lunar eclipse conjunct Pluto. And as an astrologer, what we do is look at planetary placements and patterns, and then we research what significant events took place when similar celestial patterns occurred. And I went back to 1986, April of 1986, when there was a big lunar eclipse in Taurus and Scorpio conjunct Pluto. And that was when the Chernobyl meltdown took place. And and it was the same year of the Bhopal chemical disaster. So based on that, one of the things that I expected to happen was some kind of Pluto has to do with explosions and crises and when we're dealing with the signs this June, which are involved with your Cancer and Capricorn, I really turned, I didn't think it was going to be a nuclear thing. I felt that it would be more likely to be an oil eruption. I also predicted in that same newsletter that we were, I'm looking here to quote myself exactly, Pisces and Virgo oppositions point to tsunamis, volcanic eruptions, and earthquakes. And I mentioned a large volcano has already started to erupt in the Philippines. I wrote the newsletter in December of 2009 for my January 1st. And
that was
everybody
before
now
the
knows,
Iceland volcano, right?
Yes. We have also volcanoes erupting in other areas in addition to the very serious Icelandic volcano whose name is currently, to those of us who don't live in Iceland, unpronounceable. This has been erupting, as you know, and it stopped traffic, air traffic in Europe for weeks, and it's still erupting. And the really serious part of this particular volcano is the smaller of the volcanoes. The volcano called Katla, which we can pronounce, is almost verges on a supervolcano. And when it erupts, it evokes a massive global climate change that could shut down crops and create famines and everything all over the earth. That's how serious an eruption from Katla would be. And Katla has been quaking during this time. You also realize that we've had a whole series of serious earthquakes. Remember, I wrote this in December, and in January there was the Haiti earthquake, and then the massive Quito, Ecuador earthquake right after that. These were big, and they were serious. And then I mentioned environmental disasters. We also had, remember, the Virginia mining accident, which has been eclipsed by the Gulf oil eruption. But that was the worst mining disaster in Virginia, killed all the miners in the mine in over 40 years. And that was preceded by two serious mining disasters in China. Now, one of the things I'm concerned that may lie ahead of us is because this eclipse also heavily hits the chart of China, is a possible, I'm looking for the name here in my notes, a possible eruption or a possible earthquake in the Three Gorges Dam in China. Now, you may, and your listeners may have heard of the building of this dam. There was a lot of controversy for hydroelectric power and to divert waters from one part of China to the other. And there was a lot of objection to this. They felt it would be an environmental disaster. And it seems as if recently they have spotted major cracks forming in the Three Gorges Dam in China.
Oh, dear.
And my feeling is that that may be an area that is at risk. And the end of July and going into August, we have another, in early September, we have another square of Saturn to Pluto, a pileup of planets in Libra, which is the sign of China. And I am very much concerned about some kind of serious cataclysm developing there. They've had several serious earthquakes China recently as well. So my feeling is that with Pluto's transit in Capricorn, which we have discussed on this show in the past, is there for a long time, and I call this the age of consequences. What we have done to the planet in terms of cannibalizing the planet for oil and for gas and for coal and for everything, there is even that these consequences are before our faces, and the only way we are going to find solutions to problems like this is through an elevated consciousness. We're not going to do it by addressing it with fear and panic or anger. I mean, the Gulf oil eruption, the television was filled with reporters angry with everybody, and in addition to BP, they were angry with President Obama before he had said or done anything, almost accusing him as if it were his fault that this happened.
Yeah, or blaming the Brits, who probably are just as much out of the loop from their economic dominant world as we are from ours, eh?
Exactly. I think that, like it or not, instead of pointing fingers, we all have to share in the responsibility of being asleep for so long as our economy became taken over by banksters and monopolies. And since the early 1980s, it started to become deregulated. And as I have spoken about on this show before, the other big problem is our economy falling into the hands of super rich elitist global corporations and monopolies. And further to that, most of the money is going into derivatives trades, which are nothing more than gambling operations. And currently, those gambling operations, there's something like $600 trillion in derivatives globally at this particular point in time. If we only had that money, we could fix our budget deficit, our fiscal crisis, and repair everything in sight.
But it's not really money anyway, is it?
No, it's all imaginary.
Wow.
It is. But still, there's huge amounts of money that people are making. In our earlier discussion, Veronica, you talked to me about how after Wall Street crashed and people lost their life savings and their retirements, and we had Lehman Brothers going under, and we had, you know, this, what happens a few months later is the executives of Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan Chase and all these people were coming out with their bonuses and profits, because taxpayer money saved them. I think President Obama was convinced by these people, Lawrence Summers, Timothy Geithner, and the people that were responsible for this deregulation to begin with. They helped push laws through Congress, which got rid of the Glass-Steagall Act and which created the Commodities Modernization Act, so-called, which just took the restraints off of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that this trillions of dollars of trade, the biggest derivatives people are JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo. And they're using American families' deposits as human shields to ensure if their derivatives go the wrong way. And the middle class in America is losing their jobs, their houses, and their lives.
Well, so hang on for a sec, because if a person is dealing with any of those banks, what do you recommend, that we move our monies out of them, and where do we put our money? In our mattress?
Grandma's mattress sounds pretty good. Her good old feather bed. This has been my choice. A lot of people say to me, well, everything is a disaster, and what do you do? My feeling is, as I talked about in my book, What Next? A Survival Guide to the 21st Century, which I thought was a pretty good title at the time, because many people
very
wouldn't
good.
Be surviving the 21st century. I call my angle on this the quiet revolution. And I feel that we have to start a new way of life from the grassroots up, starting in the smaller communities and neighborhoods. Now, how does that work on many different levels? And you ask me about what do we do about the banks. North Dakota created its own state bank, and it has no deficits. It has no, it didn't get into subprime lending at all, and they had the healthiest economy right now in the country.
Wow.
People, because they're lending money to businesses and to homeowners where the other banks are not. These banks are lending practically nothing. They're holding on to the TARP money, which many of them have paid most of the TARP money back. But it salvaged people who should not have been salvaged.
Mm-hmm.
And the philosophy here of saving these big banks, saving the economy, is not necessarily true.
Hmm.
Now, the thing
tell
is...
Tell me this. Just let me ask you the question first. Before, like, if we were to move some of... people were to move money into a credit union, how does a person figure out whether that is a good place and whether it's like the Bank of North Dakota that's separate?
Well,
from...
you do have to look at the ratings. Now, because our government has been so corrupted and bought out by the corporations across the board over the years, this is what has happened. Our senators and representatives and elected officials, their campaigns have been funded by this list of people that I just read off, along with pharmaceutical companies and big agribusinesses. And all of this is why they've had free rein to do anything they wanted. Along with that went the ratings systems like Moody's. Your rating systems that were supposed to rate the solvency and the credit rating of banks, and they too were caught up in the mess, so they lied, or they falsified, or they ignored. But there are rating systems. There's one called VeriBank, V-E-R-I-B-A-N-C, that you can contact online. I used to contact them by telephone, that will rate a bank. And what we did when we moved up here to Ithaca, New York, our accounts are in the local regional banks with very high ratings that I investigated and found out to be very, very solvent. They never got swept into the subprime lending. And so
called
they have
VeriBank, V as in Veronica?
Yeah, V as in Veronica.
Well, I'm going to check that out.
That I think that they are independent as, in terms of a rating system. And you just look, you ask to see the bank's statements. You know, for years and years, all of us took our institutions for granted. You go to a bank and you make deposits and you take money out. And, you know, we don't even think about evaluating these things. We don't, and we should. We should start taking the responsibility to looking at what we're getting into all the way around, to being awake. That's what I call being awake.
Right.
So we checked out these banks, and we wanted to look at their annual reports, and that's available to the public. They publish them every year. See how the bank is doing, how much money they have in reserve, how many loans do they have, how many defaults were there. And that information is available. And once you find a local bank, like we did, we found two local banks, and we put part of our money in one and part of our money in the other with outstandingly high ratings and good balance sheets. And we moved to a community here that emphasizes sustainable living, organic farming, water conservation. We wanted to move off the coastal regions because, unfortunately, I feel there will be likely, between hurricanes and oil spills and tsunamis, and the rising oceans as a result of global climate change, I do not feel that living on oceanfront property is safe anymore. And I rest my case after the Gulf accident.
Mm.
People are calling me that, you know, we're living in those places. They loved the beach, and everybody loves the beach. But we have to realize in the age of consequences for the time being, we have to be sensible and take responsibility for placing ourselves in a less hazardous condition. So we decided to pick up and move from where we lived in metropolitan New Jersey near Philadelphia and to move up here to Ithaca. We have Cornell University here. that is dedicated to the sustainable movement, and they have an agricultural and finest veterinary college in the world, and a lot of intellectual capital. We have Ithaca College, who's strong in music and the arts. We have beautiful gorges and waterfalls. We started a little container organic garden on our deck.
And how far are you from the ocean?
We're pretty far. We're 5 hours, actually, from New York City. But we are on Lake Cayuga, which is one of the Finger Lakes. These are magnificent lakes up here, of glacial lakes, very deep. We aren't in danger of running out of water in the immediate future, because in just a few years, we're going to be having global water crises, potable water, as certain parts of the world dry up, mainly the western United States, which is having major problems with water. And I've discussed these things in my book and in my newsletters over and over again. These are facts.
Well, one thing you said in this newsletter is the world is running out of oil. But I'm questioning that, because one of the big fusses that's going on is, and I have two questions here. One of the big fusses that's going on is they want to do more offshore drilling, and that there's some amazing oil reserves in America itself, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, well, what is actually true, and what's going on as far as finding alternative energy? You know, you also mentioned in your newsletter that it's quite sad because they haven't put the monies into finding optional energy sources.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly true. Well, this is my take, and I'm reading constantly about this, and I don't know that anybody knows for sure where new oil fields. There's a rumor that in Texas they found a great oil. Well, years ago, if there were these great oil fields in Texas, why did they leave Texas? Why didn't did Texas dry up, you know?
And another thing is, it takes as much oil to transport oil as it does for us to use it, right?
And that's very, very smart statement on your part, Veronica, because one of the best books to read on this subject is called The Long Emergency by James Howard Kunstler, in which he explains the age of oil is ending. All the major oil fields in Saudi Arabia and all over the place, the major oil fields have reached peak oil already. By 2006, the Oil Drum, one of the leading authorities in the world, said most of the major fields that we know about have reached peak oil by 2006.
I think it was Bruce Lipton that said oil is essentially, he calls it dinosaur blood, so as we run out of oil, maybe the dinosaurs won't be running our corporations anymore.
I think that's a great analogy, because it seems to me that the wealthy, powerful people who've been running this world are acting as grand predators, and the rest of us are their prey.
So what do we do about alternative energy? Because it seems to me that a lot of people are extremely intelligent, very bright, very resourceful, and I'm going, can't we, even for the people that are losing jobs with this Gulf oil debacle and so on, can't we be devising alternative energy explorations and business creations quickly? Can't we do that? Or is the political heavy-handed Monty Python foot too hard for us to function under?
Well, I think you have a point about the big Monty Python foot. We have a perfect storm of catastrophes. One, the global economic meltdown, and sovereign nations that got into derivatives are going broke. Iceland, Greece, Portugal, Spain, Ireland, Latvia, all over the place. As we know, the European nations, the European Union is in a lot of trouble. They're trying to salvage their currency. The other thing I've been predicting over the years, major currency solvency problems, which is why I recommended for people to get, for the time being, to get into gold. And I rest my case on that one. That has certainly proven to be true. And the U.S. dollar is where they've been going into because that's a knee-jerk reaction from the past. But as we have to pay off our giant deficits, we're going to have to print money. So the dollar as fiat money is destined to lose its worth as well. So for the time being, I'm recommending people getting into gold. I feel that we have such a perfect storm because we have an economic depression with unprecedented federal budget debt and deficits, unprecedented. And we have a system set up that refuses to really tax significantly the super wealthy. They have shields and ways of getting out of it. And one of the people tonight I was watching on a news show where one of the companies involved in the Gulf oil spill actually has its origin in the Marshall Islands. Many of these companies set themselves up and incorporate themselves in the Marshall Islands or places like that where you don't have to pay taxes. There are no environmental laws or anything else. Then they come here, and it's Transocean, and we've talked a lot, one of the big contractors connected with this eruption. And they can bypass taxes and environmental laws, just as when they outsource the labor force. We outsource manufacturing to China primarily and technology to India, where everybody works for a pittance. And then the environmental laws, which would have caused you to have to put filters on your whatever you're manufacturing, don't exist over there. So China's environment is just absolutely filled with pollution. You have to wear masks in Beijing. The air, the water, and the earth are tremendously polluted. So globalism is a bunch of corporations that escape the law.
Well, do you know George Green's stuff?
I don't know George Green, no.
Okay, well, he claims to have been very involved in the inner circles in not just the government, but in the economic inner circles of this country, and he finally stepped out. And what he says is he's actually been in meetings where they talk about the fact that they want a lot of the population to die. Okay, and that's the plan, and that's built into some of this economic domination. So when you're talking about China, I'm going, and so people say, oh my gosh, we owe all our money, we owe China so much, they're going to come and collect it. And then I go, isn't it kind of built in that China's getting so toxic, they're not going to be able to have the health to come and collect it? And I sort of get this weird, suspicious feeling that it's all kind of a setup.
Well, there are people who, George Green is not the only one that has taken this position. There are people that feel that the Bilderberg founders and the old guys who are still there and then the new ones that have come in, I think it's more of a contempt for the population at large because these elitists are very like the monarchies of the old days. They think they have a divine right. There is no conscience, nor do they pay attention to the general welfare of the people or the planet. They are like their own tribe, in a sense. I don't know that it's so much a conspiracy to get rid of people as it is just an elitist, tribal concentration of people who were privileged to begin with and got into all the right schools and had wealthy families behind them. And then they form a consortium acts in their interests only, and it's all about profit. Mm-hmm. It's all about being profitable at any expense.
And it defies the boundaries of countries, doesn't it?
Yes. America's policy, its policy in terms of energy, is to go over someplace and line the pockets. If you ever read Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins.
No, I keep meaning to read it, yes.
Yes, and that came out and was talked a lot about around after 2001, after 9/11, and he came out and he was one of these people that worked for a Charles E. Main Corporation, which was a lot like Halliburton. It supplied infrastructure for oil and gas companies. And he said they would go in to a country like in Central or South America, and they would talk to the local despot or leader, president, and they would line his pockets and say, if you just let us come in here and create this infrastructure for oil and gas, and don't worry about environment and don't worry about employing your people or anything like that. Well, they would come in and just devastate the countryside and destroy the aquifers that the indigenous people there needed for their crops or needed to live. And the local, leader or whatever, he was paid off and the people had nothing to say about it. And this has been our policy. And then, if that doesn't work, we invade, like we invaded Iraq. We will invade a country, or like we did with Panama. We invaded Panama and took out their leader, and Panama is now a patsy of ours. Hmm. So it's this kind of, with the military in, cooperating. Remember Eisenhower's famous statement that we thought about over and over again in recent years, beware the military-industrial complex. And he summed it up so beautifully, because this is what happened. The business world and the government and with the military behind them is involved in all of this, and they sort of scratch each other's back.
Well, so somebody, head of BP, was talking to the little people or apologizing to the little people. Did you hear that one?
Yes.
That was in England. But doesn't that sort of smack of the same kind of attitude there, hey?
Yes. Like, who's the little people? You know?
So which brings me to the question of, can we as little people, what I've heard from several channels, including my own channeling, is that the voices of the little people, when collected, can swell enough to really make a difference, but we have to open our eyes.
Well, I think, exactly. First of all, I think two things need to take place. One, we need to step out and have a quiet revolution at the base. Form communities where we can raise our food local. The organic gardening and farming movement is growing by leaps and bounds, and it's gathering more and more power against agribusiness and the food industries that have been allowed to get away with anything, genetically engineered seeds, and I write about that in my book as well.
Mm-hmm.
We need on a local level to form communities where we start growing our food locally, recycling our water, we talk about the energy crisis, which we're in. We're at the end of the age of oil, and this is why they know it. They're out there desperately digging in the deep waters. They would not be desperately drilling out there if we were not at the end of the age of oil. And then up here, we're having a crisis over fracking, which is a terrible way of getting through rock to get to the big natural gas deposits that are up here. And the fracking process poisons the aquifers. It literally sets your faucets on fire. It kills people. It releases terrible toxic chemicals into the aquifers. And so they're desperate. People are desperate because they know our civilization will fail without energy. And what we need to do is invent our way out of this crisis. The energy experts will tell us that at the most, if we combined both windmill and solar, would only get maybe 11 to 15% of the energy that we need. That isn't true. The other night on Charlie Rose show on PBS, I saw the head of Vestal Windmills, who was Danish, and they make the most windmills. And he said there that they have 20% of their energy is provided by windmills alone, and they're developing solar. And if you put solar arrays in the American desert where the sun is intense and there all the time, and combine that with windmills, you could probably produce something like 50% of the energy that we need with those two factors. Mm. Now, another thing no one is talking that much about, because it's not very sexy or exciting, is solar housing. I have a section of a chapter in my book written by a solar architect that tells you how to create a solar house or how to modify your house for energy efficiency. There's a new material out that they're using in Canada and Germany. It's sort of a cement composite type material that is so super insulating. If you build a house with that, it will keep your house at a constant 56 degrees all year around. And we need to start reconstructing and modifying our buildings all over this country. Now, the problem
would be a lot of jobs right there, wouldn't it?
There would be a lot of jobs if you changed windows to four-star energy windows and created new construction should all be using material like this and super insulation. And just the way you build a house with a south-facing windows and solar-collecting walls and how you landscape your property, all of these things you can do to save huge amounts of energy just in building technology alone. Now, if we had the will and the money, instead of giving it to the oil companies and subsidies to invest in these things now, like they say it's not cost efficient to invest in solar, but it is over the long term, just not in the short term. But the more solar panels you make and sell, the more cost efficient it eventually becomes.
But it's interesting because you said they say, and immediately I flashed on how the media or the voices that come at us from various sources represent these difficulties. It really stymies people over and over again. It's almost like a control device as well.
It is. I think these messages are propaganda, and they're very much corporate controlled. Well, who owns the media? About five giant corporations.
That's just since deregulation, right?
Yes. And to me, now we're fighting for what we call internet freedom and supremacy.
Yes,
not
you were
to be
telling
taken
me about
over.
That today. I didn't know about that.
Yes. And the Supreme Court, well, the Congress is just voted not to prevent this from happening. It's not they're voting for it, but they voted not to get in the way of its happening. And this monopolistic takeover by the media, the internet, to me, is the last bastion of free press and freedom of speech that we have in this country. So much of it is, and I'm not saying
and all
everything.
Over the world, really, Linda.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's we've been bought and sold by the so-called globalists, and you talk about these people meeting together and deciding the population is dispensable, it needs to be reduced anyway.
Right.
The Bilderbergs, that organization that just met recently, they meet every June. The biggest and most powerful people meet kind of in secret and get together, and there's all kinds of conspiracy theories around them.
I heard they were the Illuminati, right?
Yes. Well, you know, I just don't. My take is I don't think they're even that clubby, or I don't think, you know, Masons and Illuminati and secret conspiracies. I just think they're very, very selfish, addicted to money and power people, the same kind of people who've been around through the ages, whether they were monarchs or dictators or robber barons. You could call them all kinds, but they're the ones with the money and the power, and they want to control things, and it's very
and are they
ancient.
Worried about dying? Probably not, eh?
You know, I think there are portions of personality and sensitivity that are missing from these people. I think there's so much about what you and I anguish over every night about the future of humanity and the love of our family and friends and the love of the planet doesn't concern them. It just, they're playing a big casino game. The guys that run the hedge funds, they're good poker players, they're good gamblers, and that's all they think about. They're doing this, they don't think about whether they're living their lives for the good of humanity or doing something decent or contributing something in any way. They're just playing a game, making huge amounts of money, and they're tremendously rich. And if they want it, they have enormous political power because they can buy out the legislators. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's anything as exotic as a conspiracy.
Not as
I don't
well
even
organized,
think they're. I'd have a little more faith in them if they were a little bit more like that. I don't think they're like that at all. And I also think the thing is that anybody that they want in their group, they'll stab them in the back if they think it's in their interest to do so. I don't
kind of like a mafia only.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Very much like a rather well-educated, sophisticated mafia of different families. the big tribe and then the little tribes, and who's going to be the one that gets to the top. And they both protect each other when it's in their interests, and they stab each other in the back when it is in their interests.
And compassion isn't their high card.
Absolutely not. Now, I think by 2012 to 2015, which is the darkest time in this depression, that many of these people, my feeling is ultimately the guys at the top will probably take themselves down. I see what's happening now similar to the fall of the Roman Empire, with all of the same characteristics of the United States is like Rome. We've gotten into outlying wars that we can't win that are bankrupting us, which mm-hmm. is exactly what Rome did. Rome started out as a republic and wound up in the hands of dictators, and many of them were absolutely sociopaths and crazy. And to pacify the people, they created the gladiator arena, where the horrible slaughters took place. Turn on your TV or go to the movies and see what you see up there.
Mm-hmm.
Night in and night out.
Right.
Vicious, brutal killings and murders and tortures and all of these things.
Yeah.
It somehow is like an outlet for people's frustration to look at this. And they allow themselves to be victimized.
So it's a little like a distraction that keeps us limited, isn't it? It's a distraction that gives us the juice.
Exactly. And people who would go out there and march on Washington, instead they're watching CSI.
Listen, I want to, before, I don't want to end our time without getting to the 26th lunar eclipse, June 26th. Because what you're talking about, I'm going, we have these kind of big configurations that are astrological. Aren't they giving us, as much as they're giving us a challenge, aren't they giving us a window of energy that would, you know what I mean? Like, are they giving us an activation point, or is it suppression, or is it
absolutely
chaotic, or what?
I agree. I think that they are waking people up if we continue. It's one thing to wake up for a few days or a week and beat our chests and say, oh my God, this is terrible, this is awful, the BP are awful and we should get off of oil and then go back to business as usual. I think, as I said, we need to recreate ourselves at a local level, mm-hmm. invent our way out, and we need to make ourselves heard in the political arena. We need to create the equivalent of the civil rights movement, so beautifully organized by Martin Luther King Jr. But we need to get our country back. We need to take responsibility, and we need to create an economic and political system that is more equal opportunity in its nature. And
so what do you think about Move On
Power?
What do you think about MoveOn.org or Truth Out or all of those?
Well, I subscribe to them, and I think they're very good. I like Move On because it gives me the opportunity to vote and have it to contact my congressman and to cast a vote on issues. And I think that these online news, political based newsletters are a great opportunity, but I really think that we have to start organizing ourselves and creating events. Possibly, I'm not particularly good at marching and this sort of thing. I dedicated myself to writing my book, writing my newsletters, appearing on radio shows like yours and Coast to Coast Radio, where I've been on a couple of times, to get the word out about what the issues and themes are historically that we're facing. And I believe down the pike we can save ourselves, that we will and can have a better human race, an elevated consciousness, and a completely different footprint on this planet. And
do you think that was true in the Roman, in the fall of the Roman Empire and the other places where humanity seemed to reach a pinnacle and then go down? You know, was it always true that we could collectively turn our consciousness to a more awakened state, do you think?
I think that the history of humankind with the rise and fall of empires is a history that our children and all of us need to look at to understand that historic human evolution takes a long time, and we have to look at what our tendencies are and have been and how we've developed and evolved at other times. There have been other times that showed our ability to be great and grand in our thinking. We really, really need to look at these cycles and rises and falls of empires to see where we need to go today. I think it's going to be the end of the age of empires. Hmm. I think empires are finished, including the American Empire, that we're finished on that level. That there's going to be an entirely different side, a more democratic, more egalitarian society that will be at work in the future. And I also feel that by the 2020s, we will have discovered a brand new source of virtually infinite energy that has nothing to do with fossil fuels. Hmm. I think that what's going on in CERN, Switzerland right now, looking for the God particle, you know, when they had the experiment that finally succeeded with the colliding two subatomic particles at the end of March. Mm-hmm. I looked at the planets at that time, and Venus and Aries was a beautiful sextile to Neptune in Aquarius. And in the 2020s, we're going to have Pluto in Aquarius and Neptune in Aries. And my feeling is that these subatomic physics areas that are being explored and experimented on at this time are going to lead us to an entirely new discovery about energy and about reality. Hmm. And that fossil fuel won't even be in the picture.
Wow. So what about the eclipse? I've got several things I want to say, and I'm afraid we're going to run out of time, which makes me frustrated.
Well, the eclipse, basically, I want to explain that the eclipse, when you have a lunar eclipse like this, it starts in its shadow 6 months before the eclipse takes place.
Okay.
And it moves until 6 months after the eclipse takes place. So the effects of this, which is its gigantic confrontation with crises on every level, mainly the environmental level, the level of earth changes, of accidents, spills, things of this nature,
and personal
political
levels
upheavals.
As well.
This is continuing into the end of this year, because it is occurring in just a few days from now on the 26th of June. So it the beginning of it was in December of 2009. It culminates the end of December of 2010, but I feel it's extended because there was another major solar eclipse conjunct Venus in January of this year, whose shadow extends into January of next year. So my feeling is that these issues and themes are not only not going to go away, but we need to confront them, we need to face them, we need to understand them. This eclipse, by the way, the big G8 meeting of rich countries is meeting in Canada on the 26th.
Oh, wow. So do you think that's favorable for them or cataclysmic?
Well, I think they're going to come together and say, hey, you know something? We're falling apart. The world is falling apart. We are confronted with one cataclysm after another in every way. But I don't have much faith that they're going to do anything about anything. They never seem to. I think that we have to pressure our leadership, and I think that President Obama went into the presidency not knowing, dangerously ignorant. He's a bright man, a charming man. I think he's a good person innately, but he thought he had to work with these big guns that created the problem. He thought that he had to work with them, and it was a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're dyed in the wool looking at life and the people and the economy through one kind of lens, and that's a lens of the cabal.
Mm-hmm.
And he is learning as he goes along. And I think as time goes on, he's going to divest himself and divest himself and divest himself of a lot of the people that he has hired and change the guard and move in a different direction. I hope it's just enough, and I hope it's soon enough.
And my guides always say, send him light, send him light. He needs all the support he can get on that level.
Yes, you realize that this young man, inexperienced, came in and has been hit with absolutely every cataclysm that you could imagine.
Yep. Yeah, he walked into a very broken machine in many ways.
He did, and he was handed a devastated economy and banking system, and he's trying to figure out how not to allow these institutions to collapse before he can fix them. And sometimes you just have to let something collapse in order to recreate it.
Well, it seems like new birth, a birth has to be rising. I mean, this is really birth canal time in many ways, isn't it?
It certainly is, Veronica, and that really, it's what we have to keep in mind. It's darkest before the dawn,
mm-hmm.
and the suffering and the confrontation with things we don't want to see is part of the process of the death of the old and the birth of the new.
So do you recommend that people look, take a look at what's going on and really
look harshly? I always say this is similar to looking at the ancient head of Medusa and not turning to stone. That's the challenge, to look at this and to accept responsibility for changing it. And every person has a different set of talents. Some young people may want to paint up signs and march in Washington. Others may be good community organizers and may be able to organize local political interest groups. Others, myself, I'm a person who loves to write and who loves to talk, so I wrote a book. I have an ongoing newsletter. I'm doing it like you are, through the medium of communication. And ultimately, people will ultimately listen. Why? Because what we're describing is happening.
And as we want everyone to wake up, wake up, wake up, and that really just means becoming oneself and getting feeling the unlimitation value of being truly yourself, and then that's a collective movement in itself, isn't it?
It certainly is, and I think that the collective consciousness is challenged now to evolve, is challenged to be reborn, is challenged to live in concert with the earth and in cooperation with each other and with the spirit of divine love in our hearts, which is sitting there waiting for us to acknowledge it.
It's very exciting. Well, tell us, that's a wonderful way to end it, because some of this stuff is a highly charged material, Miss Linda Sherman.
Yes, it is.
So, and your book is an amazing book, What's Next? A Survival Guide for the 21st Century. And you're going to continue with your newsletter, eh, which is a pithy newsletter, I have to say.
Yes, and it's gotten a lot of attention since I've been appearing on radio shows. And And it is soothsayer, SOOTHESAYER.com. And I put a new newsletter up once a month at the first of the month.
All right. It's only soothing when you really wake up and sit in your center appreciating this information, knowing we can make the changes, right?
Absolutely. And I have great faith. Resolve myself that each one, you and I and everybody who steps forward, can resolve to change this world. It isn't impossible, and there are no little people, in spite of what BP says.
That's right, and we're all inventors. So I want to say thank you ever so much for coming on again, and I hope that we'll talk to you again in a couple of months.
It's been a pleasure, and thank you for having me, Veronica.
My pleasure. I'm sure everybody appreciates it. Thank you, Linda.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
All right, this is Veronica Entwistle saying, I hope you learned a lot about yourself and about what's going on in the collective right now. But please check soothsayer.com, SOOTHESAYER.com for her updates. Tune in on Thursday at 7 o'clock for Radiance by Design, where my guides and angels and I answer your questions. We talk about meditations and accesses into yourself and into becoming more and more authentic. And at 8 o'clock, Jackie Salvitti, ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness. I get to be Jackie's sidekick as she does her exploration and then works with her team. Sometimes I get to interview them, and sometimes they take you on an amazing meditation. So this is Veronica Entwistle saying good night, and thank you so much for tuning in and being a paradigm shifter.